you get on the roller coaster and there's some ups and downs and it's pretty scary, and maybe you're even in the dark at Disneyland and you don't know what's coming next.
The state's largest insurer braces for upheaval with the Affordable Care Act. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 23rd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, interior residents complain about sonic booms from a military training.
All the windows were rattling. I was wondering if they were going to break. My dog was hovering at my feet. He wouldn't go outside.
Those stories tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
A 31-year-old Anchorage man accused of driving drunk and killing two teenage girls walking along a street has been indicted by a grand jury. The State Department of Law said today in a statement that Stacy Graham was indicted on two counts of second-degree murder and two counts of manslaughter. He also was earlier charged by the state with driving under the influence. The girls, identified as 15-year-old friends Brooke McPheeters and Jordan Durr, were walking home after doing some back-to-school shopping August 9th when they were struck. Police say Graham had been seen just before the crash speeding recklessly, and his blood alcohol content was about three times the legal limit. A legislative attorney says a proposed new regulation that would further define what constitutes a, quote, medically necessary abortion for purposes of receiving Medicaid funding would likely be found unconstitutional. The legal memo prepared by Jean Michel was requested by Democratic Senator Hollis French. Michel says without a compelling state interest, a court would likely find the proposed new rule, quote, unconstitutionally discriminatory. The Alaska Supreme Court has held the state must fund medically necessary abortions if it funds medically necessary services for others with financial needs. The Alaska State Personnel Board is considering including same-sex partners in the definition of immediate family. The proposed changes in rules would allow state employees to take family leave due to a serious health condition of a same-sex partner. Same-sex marriage is not legal in Alaska because of a state constitutional amendment, but Deputy Personnel Director Nancy Such says the proposed change in rules stems from a recent review of a 2005 Alaska Supreme Court decision. That decision says it is unconstitutional to offer valuable benefits to spouses but not to same-sex domestic partners. The Personnel Board plans to consider the changes at its September 19th meeting in Anchorage. The largest health insurer in Alaska is likely to get a lot bigger next year. Premera Blue Cross Blue Shield is one of two insurance companies that will offer plans on the new federally run marketplace under the Affordable Care Act. The company is expecting to serve thousands more customers in the state, but that growth will come with the kind of uncertainty the insurance industry has never had before. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Jeff Davis spends a lot of time thinking about Alaska's health insurance marketplace.
This is a big, big undertaking for everyone that's involved.
Davis is president of Premera Blue Cross Blue Shield in Alaska. Right now, the company has 10,000 individual customers in the state, and Premera thinks that number could double by the end of next year, thanks to the new marketplace. But Davis doesn't talk like a guy who may double a segment of his customer base. He sounds worried. He says in the long run, having new customers will be great, but
we are fully prepared that we could lose a significant amount of money in 2014 because of just the uncertainty about who comes in and when they come in.
That's because, for the first time, health insurers won't be able to exclude customers with pre-existing conditions. Davis says that's kind of like letting people buy homeowners insurance while their house is on fire. The new law has provisions, like open enrollment periods, to help lessen the impact. But Davis thinks the first wave of people to sign up on the marketplace will have significant health problems. Then he expects healthier people will follow, especially those who qualify for subsidies. In Alaska, that's anyone who makes less than $57,000 a year.
Now, for people who are subsidy eligible, who are buying a plan today, they're likely to see the amount they're paying every month out of their own pocket actually go down because of the effect of the subsidies.
But for those without subsidies, individual insurance could be costly, and in some cases, quite costly. Primera says most rates it filed to offer on the marketplace are higher than its current plans. Davis explains the policies are required to have better benefits and smaller deductibles than the most popular plans today. He says a young family of four earning more than $117,000 a year is likely to see the biggest rate increase, and they won't qualify for a subsidy.
There will be winners and losers. There will be some people who are significantly more out of pocket for their health insurance after January 1st, 2014, and there'll be some who will be pay significantly less. And it's just that upheaval and that mix that worries me.
Adding to that upheaval is the uncertainty of what the marketplace will actually look like. Davis says there's still a lot unknown about how it will work on October 1st. He does expect it to be functional, but he says it will probably be bare bones at first, with more features added in later on. Susan Johnson, the regional administrator for the Federal Health and Human Services Department, acknowledges it won't be perfect at first.
Let's be clear, there will be problems, but let's not have the news on October 2nd be Susan Johnson had to wait 45 minutes to get through the call center. Let's have the news be Susan Johnson finally has the opportunity to have insurance and she never had before, and now she can be healthier and live longer.
Johnson says the marketplace will be a huge step forward for how people buy individual and small group insurance in Alaska and across the country. For Davis, that huge step will completely transform the way he does business in the state, and he's prepared for a wild ride.
You get on the roller coaster and there's some ups and downs and it's pretty scary, and maybe you're even in the dark at Disneyland and you don't know what's coming next. It's a lot like that, but as with a roller coaster ride, at the end, you get off.
Davis expects to get off the roller coaster in 2 or 3 years and arrive at a new normal where a lot more Alaskans have health insurance. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
The military's red flag training exercise wrapped up today. Representatives of branches of the U.S. and several foreign forces participated in the 2-week training, which included jet fighters and bombers engaged in mock battle using live ordnance. As KUAC's Dan Bras reports, some interior residents are glad it's over.
Much of the air exercises have been on or over interior training ranges out of Eielson Air Force Base in Delta Junction, and locals have taken notice. Longtime area resident Mindy Eggleston describes sonic booms
that were so violent that it made me jump, like I thought somebody had shot something into my home. All the windows were rattling. I was wondering if they were going to break. My dog was hovering at my feet. He wouldn't go outside.
Eggleston says she filed a noise complaint with Eielson and later heard back from the base that 2 fighter jets going Mach 1 had veered from an established fly zone and that corrective action was taken. Eggleston, who worries about the effects of aircraft noise on wildlife, says her dog has been affected.
We're having real behavioral problems with my dog. I actually take him to a behavior adjustment therapist in Fairbanks. And, oh, there's a sonic boom right now that I'm going to need to report. And now he's come and sitting right next to me and looking out the window like, oh, I'm not going out there.
Eggleston says the military has plenty of space to train over and should steer clear of residential and sensitive wildlife areas. She's worried about the proposed expansion of military training and areas and isn't the only animal owner upset with what's happening.
My name is Eleanor Schneider, and I live in Delta, and I run a dog boarding kennel and a small dog and cat rescue operation.
Schneider, who lives in the same Clearwater neighborhood as Eggleston, has about 15 animals at her facility. Schneider says they've been reacting whenever bombs rumble in the distance and military planes fly over.
Get a little nervous and they start pacing around and panting. You know, they do that. But when the sonic booms come, they were hiding in their houses. They were digging caves that they could crawl into in the dirt. And they tremble and they won't come out to eat, which is real unusual, especially for the strays, because they, lots of times they've been starved and and abandoned, and so for them not to come out to get their food is real unusual.
Schneider says she hasn't called in a complaint because she doesn't think it'll change anything. Eielson spokesman Captain Joost Verdijn contends the Air Force has a system for following up on complaints.
A noise complaint program where we encourage people to call in and let us know if something is bothering them and what we can do about it. We investigate every one of these that we receive and look into why it happened or if somebody was doing something wrong in the aircraft or done something wrong. Those people are debriefed, they're counseled, and they're letting know, hey, you know, this is not the way we can do things. You have to be a good neighbor.
Verdijn says the Air Force has received 12 complaints during this month's red flag, including several about animals being scared. He says the number of complaints is a bit lower than during past red flag exercises, which included more planes. He says Eielson normally gets about 2 noise complaints a month. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, UAF dedicates a long-overdue new science building.
We had kids coming from high schools that had better facilities than the university. That's no longer true.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
University of Alaska Fairbanks faculty and staff gathered yesterday for the ribbon cutting and dedication of the new Margaret Murray Life Science Building. The new building houses the Department of Biology and Wildlife alongside the Institute of Arctic Biology. KUAC's Emily Schwing has the story.
The smell of new paint and a freshly waxed floor wafts through the air. And on a clear day, sunlight streams through 2-story tall windows of the foyer of a brand new science facility at UAF. Brian Barnes is the director of the Institute of Arctic Biology. He says he's been waiting for this new building to become a reality for more than a decade.
You know, we were teaching our students in classrooms that were built in 1965 and 1967. We had kids coming from high schools that had better facilities than the university. That's no longer true.
Barnes is standing next to Paul Layer, UAF's Dean of the College of Natural Sciences and Mathematics. Layer says it's also been many years since UAF's biology department has been housed in one location.
Biology is the largest major at UAF. We have over 400 majors in biology and wildlife, and it's the largest graduate program as well. And so for us to have a place that has the state-of-the-art kind of facilities that we can actually use, that the students can have access to, is really for us way, way overdue.
The new building is named for Margaret Murray, the first woman to graduate from Alaska's Agricultural College and School of Mines back in 1924. The school later became UAF. Murray is better known as a naturalist and author who helped found a conservation movement in the United States. The building itself is bright, dominated by open space, large windows, and lots of glass. As you walk through the hallways, you catch a glimpse into laboratories and research space. Brian Barnes says that was the ultimate goal.
One of the driving principles was to have research and instruction, teaching labs near each other, so that undergrads coming to class would walk by research labs that they could look into, see other undergraduates working in there, and think, I want to do that too. So that's the juxtaposition. And then we have faculty and graduate students thrown into the mix as well.
On the first floor, there's a 150-seat auditorium equipped with smart room technology for lectures and presentations. Instead of chalkboards, there are sliding glass panels at the front for instructors. Across the hallway, Paul Layer tries out one of the new chairs in a high-tech classroom. They're black, wide, and round around the bottom, and they have wheels.
Oh, they're like flying saucers with their own desks.
They have desktops attached and even a cup holder.
Essentially, they're nice and flat for your laptop, but then I can put this one here.
Layer shows off how the desks and chairs maneuver so students can break into groups.
Have a small group, and biology has really embraced that. A lot of the teaching nowadays is on this idea of groups discussing problems and then sharing that with the larger classroom as opposed to just simply somebody standing up and talking for an hour.
The building is equipped with low-flow plumbing, water filters, and a high-tech ventilation system. Brian Barnes says despite the wide open space and the large windows, it's also extremely energy efficient.
It's supposed to be the most modern building in the state in terms of efficiencies.
He says there's only one thing he'd change.
Well, we would have had a fourth floor. We would have made it bigger because we still are cramped for research space for faculty throughout, so that would have been nicer. But within the design, actually, ask us in a year because we really want the students in here and we want to try it out a little bit more.
State bonding funded the $88.5 million project. It came in more than $850,000 under budget. Construction was also completed earlier than planned. Classes began here in May. Students will return for the fall semester next week. For KUAC News, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
Eldred Rock wind speed and wind direction sensors have not been working for a couple of weeks, frustrating both the Lynn Canal Gillnet fleet and the National Weather Service. The instruments record weather conditions used on NOAA weather radio observations and in forecasts. Warning coordination meteorologist Joel Curtis says the agency wants it fixed, but the rock is not an easy place to reach.
That equipment is really, really hard to service. It's up on a rock, and it's out in the middle of the Lynn Canal, away from ports and everything else. You have to have every part in the world with you when you go there, because you only have one shot at fixing it. It's not the kind of place that you're going to say, oh, well, I'll just come back tomorrow. It doesn't work that way.
The historic Eldred Rock is home to a once-manned lighthouse, which was activated in 1906. Soggy skies did little to dampen enthusiasm on the first day of the Alaska State Fair in Palmer on Thursday. Colorful umbrellas competed with the dazzle of neon on the midway and the blazing hues of the vendors' booths to offset the overcast sky. Teenagers shrieked while riding a contraption called the Zippy, while carnival hucksters sharpened their skills on the gullible.
I have a $3 prize of 5 and 10. I'm guessing age, weight, or the month you were born. That's the polite one. You can fool the guesser. You too can be a winner, and everybody loves a winner right here at the fair.
There is a little something for everyone at the fair. Gamers bet on a live rat named Sylvester in a new spin on roulette. Inside the farm exhibits building, preschoolers tried to guide a goat around an obstacle course.
All right, let's give Andrew some encouragement.
Outside, on the purple trail, vendors sold everything from steaming bowls of crab bisque to mining equipment. While at the King BMX stunt show, three brave volunteers lay prone as a bicycle-riding daredevil jumped over them.
Both wheels are going to come off the ground, both at the same time. It is a trick known as the bunny hop. Come on, guys, give it up for Tom Hogg and check out this bunny hop. Up and over. You guys give it up for Tom right there. Give it up for our volunteers right there.
Of course, fair food is in itself a main attraction. Donut burgers and fried waffles can soothe a hungry stomach. And to really raise the spirits,
are you ready?
The ever-popular Dungeon of Doom.
Remain calm. Are you calm, sir?
This year's Alaska State Fair runs through Labor Day in Palmer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by The Salmon Project. In Alaska, salmon are food, annual traditions, and a source of jobs, businesses, and community. Information on caring for salmon habitat or your weekend catch, plus salmon love stories at salmonlove.com. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmiut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron.
This week on AK, fishing. A group of four female soldiers spent a weekend last month on the Naknek River. The weather was gorgeous, the fish were biting, and the company was unmatched at the Project Healing Waters retreat. Through the program, the fishing community and veterans organizations hope to help injured veterans in their long recovery. KDLG's Ben Matheson takes us out on the water.
It's midday on the Naknek River, a few miles upstream of King Salmon. Fish on. Army Staff Sergeant Tabitha Adams begins a 10-minute fight to bring in a world-famous Naknek king salmon.
Come on, jump so we can see why you're being so hard to bring in.
Even at the end of its life cycle, this king is swimming hard and springing up in the air. After a hard-fought 10 minutes, Tabitha lands the king.
You got him! Got him! Oh, you got him!
This fishing crew features two active duty women from the Army, plus veterans from the Air Force and Navy. This is a Project Healing Waters all-women's fishing trip. Kelly Pearson is in the Warrior Transition Unit at Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson. She spent 34 months over three deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan. But on this day, she's learning how to fly fish, wading with her rod in a few feet of water.
What I'm doing is I'm taking the rod and I'm actually letting the fly just float, watching the indicator, watching it floating downstream. And if the indicator goes under the water, that means we have to set the line, means we probably have a fish.
As with many of the best fishing trips, this weekend is about much more than the fish.
We've made it through some pretty difficult challenges in our past. We're bonding here, you know, just to get to know each other through fishing. And I believe that fishing is a healing activity. You know, it makes you concentrate on things other than what happened in the past.
It's pretty easy to be in the moment on this particular weekend.
It is sunny and warm, and the fish are very cooperative today.
Jan Schnorr is co-director of Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. She offers advice on fishing and also makes sure that everyone is having fun.
It's a way to help heal. You're out here in the wilderness. It's beautiful. It's calm. It's quiet. And when you get that fish on, it's great.
It's easy to forget in the 70-degree sunshine, but each woman's journey to this day, to this particular spot on the river, spans decades, wars, continents, and for many, the most difficult days of their lives. Rebecca White from Anchorage was in the Navy. She enlisted right out of high school and worked as an air traffic controller. At her first duty station, she says she was raped and began to develop post-traumatic stress disorder. Moving around in the Navy, the PTSD went undetected for years. After she left the service, she abused alcohol until she finally connected with other female veterans.
It's a healing and bonding experience that you can't get anywhere else, you know. To be here, what this means to me, and you know, I've never really fished before. I actually hooked my first king today. You know, it was just like absolutely amazing experience, even though I lost it. But to be here with a bunch of women that doesn't matter what age we are, or what time we served, or what service we were in, you know, it's, we all understand the camaraderie of the military and, you know, the hurt of PTSD, because it's just, it's something that just, you don't want to live with for the rest of your life. You know, you don't want to be medicated for the rest of your life. So it's stuff like this, allows us to start that healing process.
And then there's Jane Darden.
J-A-N-E.
And her trademark laugh. She served in the Air Force for 5 years, mostly stationed at Eielson Air Force Base in Fairbanks. Before this weekend, she hadn't gone fishing for about a decade.
Oh my goodness. I think it's the best type of healing imaginable, because the fly fishing alone is so meditative and you're totally in the moment and you can forget whatever cares or worries or pain you have in your life. So I think it's so beneficial in always mind, body, spirit.
As the weekend wraps up Sunday evening, all of the women travel home with big boxes of vacuum-packed fish. And you can add to that new skills, memories, and friendships. In Dillingham, I'm Ben Matheson.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Kodiak, the community of about 6,000 people on Kodiak Island.
My name is Jenny Osterman. I'm the interim executive director for the Discover Kodiak office here in Kodiak. It's a division of the Kodiak Island Convention and Visitors Bureau.
My name is Eric Olson. I'm a sergeant with the Alaska State Troopers here in Kodiak, Alaska.
Kodiak is beautiful. It's green and glorious, and especially this year we're having summer all year long so far.
Kodiak is an archipelago, a group of islands southwest of Anchorage, Alaska, second largest island in the United States. It's a group of several islands, of which there's six different village communities, and then there's the main village or town of Kodiak itself, which also encompasses the world's largest U.S. Coast Guard base, that's stationed here in Kodiak.
We have a large tourism industry here, especially active during the summertime. Our tourist activities run the gamut from hiking and kayaking, visiting museums, and driving the 100 miles of road that we have to view our beautiful scenery and wildlife.
Obviously, commercial fishing is one of the mainstays of the island. Also, there's large state, federal, and local city government type of employees, as well as there's a large resident population of folks who are employed with the tourist industry.
Well, local people like to go to the beach and have a picnic or ride four-wheelers. They also like to go out and do sport fishing. Many people in the community are involved in the arts.
I think Kodiak's unique because there's many different types of ethnic groups who make up the island. You have Native Alaskans who are made up of Aleutic or Russian ethnicity. We also have Samoan, Filipino, Hispanic, Asian residents who make up part of our community, as well as people from all over the world who come here and visit and end up deciding they like it so much they end up becoming a resident here. So we have people literally from all over the world here in Kodiak.
That was Jenny Osterman and Eric Olson, who live in Kodiak. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ben Matheson, Annie Fite, and Alex Duware. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Kristen Platt is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.